This is Rabbi Kenneth Chelst, continuing an exploration of parallels and contrasts between the slavery of the Israelites in Egypt and the African Americans in the South. Our history begins with Avodim Hayinu of Pharaoh Bar Mitzrayim. We were political slaves of the Pharaoh of Egypt. In another segment, I quoted the Rav's explanation of why political slavery was more brutal than chattel slavery. In this essay, I will highlight the advantage of political slavery over chattel slavery. The Mechilta states, for four reasons Israel was worthy of redemption from Egypt. They did not change their names, they did not change their language, they did not speak Lashon Hara or reveal their secrets, and not even one of them was found to be promiscuous. All of the above behaviors were viable in political slavery under which the Israelites lived together as a large community in the land of Goshen. When the slave work was completed, they returned home to their families, used their Hebrew names and language. In addition, there was no natural opportunity for Egyptian taskmasters to seduce the wives of the Israelite slaves. In contrast, the African slave, upon arriving on the North American continent, was not in an environment that would enable the slave to stem cultural erosion. Quote, one of the first acts of the slave owner was to strip away the slave's cultural identity by giving him a new name. Overseers continued to drill the new names into recent arrivals and made sure to call them always by ye names we gave them. Moreover, the African arrival would have found it impossible to maintain his native language and pass it on to succeeding generations in this foreign land. Mastering a new language was critical for the new arrival so that he might gain status within the local plantation society. An inability to communicate in English would leave the slave feeling isolated. Harriet Jacobs, also known by Linda Brent in her autobiography, Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl, which is the most widely read female antebellum slave narrative, recounts her life experience before she was freed. Jacobs offered her contemporary readers a startlingly realistic portrayal of her sexual history while a slave. She describes her attempts at the age of 15 to ward off the advances of her master, who was 40 years her senior. Quote, at 15, my master began to whisper foul words in my ear. He peopled my young mind with unclean images, such as only a vile monster could think of. He told me I was his property, that I must be subject to his will in all things. As noted in Mechilta, not even one of the Israelites was found to be promiscuous. Marriages of enslaved blacks were not legally recognized in almost every slave state. Furthermore, marriage between slaves, where it was permitted, could provide only limited protection for the female slave. As Henry Bibb wrote in his narrative, quote, a poor slave's wife can never be true to her husband, contrary to the will of her master. She dare not refuse to be reduced to the state of adultery at the will of her master. Nevertheless, slaves on large plantations often married, and after the Civil War, they sanctified their vows, at times, en masse. Chaplain Asa Fisk married 118 couples in a single hour in the Memphis district. It was also critical that these slave marriages be recorded for legal reasons. For example, the recorded marriage would enable a wife to draw a pension for her husband's service in the U.S. military. This ends one of two explorations of the difference between chattel slavery and political slavery. The other explores the brutality of overseers in these two slave frameworks. Thank you, and goodbye.